choices. And one of the choices is doing it through the political system. As you've been talking about, you know, a new Green Party and all of that organizing within the political system, I mean, that's going to go so far. My encouragement for that is Ralph Nader. He's really in there thinking that we can go and lobby Congress and get things done if it's done the right way. Okay, but beyond that, and this has been done in a lot of countries, very effectively so, to, you know, a mass rising, movement of the people, and there's this little book, a little red book called From Dictatorship to Democracy by Gene Sharp, and he has, this is unbelievable, but he has 198 ways to do that in this little book. This book has been banned in authoritarian countries because of its effectiveness, and I thought he said in the book that it was used in the Arab Spring, that uprising, but it has been used, and these tactics have been done in real dictatorships. I mean, when this goes over to military authoritarian control, people have risen up using these techniques, strategizing, using good and different tactics to
That's got to be the last word. From Dictatorship to Democracy by Gene Sharp, as one tool in the toolbox.
Okay, and thank you for that, Thomas, because we got to go.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thanks, Celeste.
You're very welcome. And it is 8:59 here on KBOO Portland. You got about 30 seconds. Well, I guess that was it. We want to thank you, everyone, for your participation, for listening, and for those of you who are able, for financially supporting your community connection, KBOO Portland.
But thanks to an anonymous donor, every dollar contributed now through May 31st will be matched up to $20,000. We know that times are tough right now, so we're asking those of you who are able to give to donate today at kboo.fm/give. Financial support from our listeners is what allows community radio to carry out the important role we play in times like these. Give today at our website. Again, that's kboo.fm/give. Thanks for your support, and thanks for tuning in.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Our job is to help the people who are willing to seek office to get their ideas, plans, and goals to you. Our plan had been to bring all candidates into the studio, and in fact, all had agreed and were scheduled to do so. Then came the start of the coronavirus peak and the beginning of closures and social distancing. We had to come up with an alternative. So we invited each candidate to provide a written reply to prepared questions online. Each received the same set of questions and had 48 hours to return their responses. Because we are an auditory podcast and radio show, we are broadcasting the candidate responses. In order to reflect the flavor of a debate as best we can, I will read each question and I will read each candidate's response. Inside Washington County endorses no one in any race. Any change in tone or inflection as I read any candidate's words is inadvertent and unintentional. The responses were sent to us in the week of March 22nd, just to give a time frame for when the answers were given. Today, we have the race for Washington County Sheriff. We have responses from incumbent Sheriff Pat Garrett and challenger Sergeant Red Worthingham. We thank them both for adjusting with us to this unprecedented situation by providing their written responses, enabling us to bring their views to you. We also will give you a chance to place a virtual vote, so stay tuned after the last response and you'll learn how we can do that. Moving to the first question, what experience and skills make you the best choice for Washington County Sheriff in 2021? Responding first, Pat Garrett. Pat says, I am the only candidate who earned state certification as a police officer, which is required in Oregon to be sheriff. Police certification bolstered by 30 years of experience helps provide necessary skills to lead the third largest enforcement agency in the state. My opponent has never been a police officer. If a person becomes sheriff without police certification, Oregon law requires certification to be obtained in the first year of office. Given the 4-month basic police academy and about 3 months of field training, my opponent would spend over half of the first year in office just meeting the legal qualifications to be sheriff. I am the only candidate certified in both police and corrections, grounded in knowledge of the two main uniform functions at the sheriff's office. I am the only candidate to serve at the rank above first line supervisor at the sheriff's office and who has led an organization of 600 strong. I am the only candidate not on the district attorney's list of law enforcement officials with suspected credibility issues, as described in a February 28, 2020 Oregonian article. I earned a master's degree in public administration from Portland State University and graduated from the FBI National Academy. I served 25 years in the U.S. Army and Army Reserve, where I began as a private and rose to the rank of lieutenant colonel. During my service, I commanded companies and was mobilized twice after 9/11, earning a Bronze Star Medal. My leadership experience helped me ensure our strong performance in national accreditation and inspections in jail operations, jail health care, law enforcement, and forensic. Same question offered to Red. Red responds, "With 18 years working in Washington County Public Safety, I have overseen programs like court security, extraditions and transports, and alternative incarceration sentences. I've also served as the primary negotiator on our multi-agency hostage negotiations team. My degree in social work and psychology gives me particular skills and knowledge working with those who struggle with mental illness and vulnerable populations. I am also a working-class candidate with lived experience as a woman of color, single mother, and foster child, giving me unique insight to understand obstacles experienced by many people in our communities. Having been a visitor for an incarcerated family member, I understand the importance of dignity and humanity for community members supporting someone in the criminal justice system. During my career at the Sheriff's Office, I've been a leading voice for change on matters of jail safety, criminal justice reform, and ways to save money while prioritizing public safety. As a result of my advocacy, juveniles are no longer housed in adult jail. We now have collaborative effort with judges for efficient use of jail beds to reduce forced releases unsettling the public. We had notable reduction in costs due to how I've managed and scheduled temporary deputies filling staffing gaps. Transgender inmates are treated with greater respect regarding personal gender identity, though there is more work to do, and I will champion that continued work. And I became the only Washington County deputy ever certified by the Department of Justice to audit and implement the Prison Rape Elimination Act, ensuring sexual safety of incarcerated persons, especially women. Those are things I've achieved, but there is more work to do. I'm running to move us forward and be the sheriff the county deserves." Moving now to question two, what current problems do you observe with policing and law enforcement in Washington County that you plan to address in your term? Red responds, "The problems include an increase in crime. In sheriff's districts, there was a 49% increase in violent crime since 2016. In contrast, Hillsborough and Tigard had 1% decreases, while Forest Grove had a 1% increase in violent crime in the same time. Misuse of technology, civil rights concerns. Our sheriff's office is using facial recognition software, despite concerns about privacy and efficacy in the technology, for women and people of color. Too much focus on incarceration versus rehabilitation. Individuals who are mentally ill, homeless, or substance addicted are repeatedly charged and arrested to manage their impact to community livability, and a lack of transparency and accountability. Transparency and accountability to the public we serve is incomplete and not interactive. To address these problems, I will restructure staff, reducing overtime spending, and keeping uniformed deputies to patrols in our community rather than administrative positions. Increased presence in our communities is critical. I will discontinue use of facial recognition until the technology is reliable and then engage community collaboration on issues of privacy. I will continue to be a passionate advocate for mental health, addiction treatment, and affordable housing. Currently, we have only 4 mental health deputies and 4 hours monthly for homelessness outreach. I will increase both services. These positions will collaborate with service providers to incentivize participation in treatment, shelter placement, and hospitalization. Finally, I commit to provide honest and complete information even when faced with improving in an area of service. Same question to Pat. Pat responds, crime rate and traffic stop inequities. The rise in crime over the past 2 years and associated workload increases. Our county grows by over 10,000 annually, and as we change to become one large metropolitan area, my plan to address this challenge includes support local implementation of the just published Governor's Alcohol and Drug Policy Commission's strategic plan to significantly increase addiction prevention, intervention, treatment, and recovery. Detectives will tell you almost every violent crime involves drugs or alcohol. Successfully implementing the strategic plan will increase treatment services and lower rates of addiction and the crime it drives. Also, provide adequate funding so our law enforcement professionals can hold offenders accountable, particularly those who victimize vulnerable populations like children and senior citizens. And implement a law enforcement assisted diversion program to divert addiction-driven offenders who commit minor crimes into treatment and reduce future reoffending. Also, bolster alternatives to incarceration that focus on rehabilitation like drug court, mental health court, and veterans court. 2, where they exist, inequities related to traffic stops for communities of color. I support the creation of Oregon's law to analyze police stops and their outcomes. Most reporting agencies exhibit some degree of inequitable impacts to communities of color. To reduce those inequitable outcomes, I would continue to enforce high standards and our commitment to bias-free policing, supported by robust training in equity, inclusion, and diversity. Also, try innovative strategies to increase enforcement equity, learning from other states and agencies, to include non-judicial resolutions for communities experiencing inequitable outcomes, and ensure we're responsive to concerns and questions about data and enforcement. Moving to question 3. There is a widespread concern over the COVID-19 pandemic and how government institutions can play a role in halting its spread. This question is being asked in March as Oregon's numbers are still rising and the crisis is just picking up. As sheriff, how would you guide Washington County through a massive public health crisis such as this one, protecting public health alongside public safety? Pat Garrett responds, implementing virus mitigation strategies in jail is important to protect public health. We quickly implemented aggressive control measures and planning to include 1, working with county health experts to confirm our planning and implementation remains consistent with health directives. 2, medical screening arriving inmates for COVID-19 symptoms began early February. In mid-March, we began screening every person entering the jail. 3, working with the circuit court to release low-level offenders to enable social distancing inside the jail. Inmates eat and sleep in individual cells. 4, temporarily restricting jail bookings to serious crimes, suspending social visits to reduce the potential for virus introduction and spread. 5, continuously cleaning surfaces. An important part of a leader's strategy is communicate, communicate, communicate. To that end, 1, I instituted daily leadership meetings, email updates to staff, and ensure county leaders remain apprised. 2, I convened a meeting with justice leaders to share information, coordinate virus control measures, avoid confusion, identify information needed, and establish a meeting schedule. 3, I spoke with all 8 police chiefs in Washington County to communicate my thanks to them for their leadership and share virus containment strategies. 4, to support transparency, I have communicated directly with the media. I conducted interviews by radio and TV and support our public information officers who are in overdrive to provide as much public information as possible. My leadership approach includes empowering other leaders. As I expect of our excellent team, our leaders are communicating with other agencies, sharing ideas to best protect staff and public, continuing critical public safety services as we help guide our community through this crisis. Same question, protecting public health alongside public safety? Red responds, decisive and early action is essential, which includes advanced preparation. Prior to crisis, I will have robust disaster preparedness and supply plans. I will engage the sheriff's office in developing community emergency response teams like many of our cities do now. These are trained volunteers who assist responders in emergencies. They organize communities, report disaster intelligence, and other tasks in neighborhoods when needed. In case of public health crisis, like COVID-19, the public needs timely and accurate official information with justification of decisions made. I will coordinate, as part of the County Emergency Preparedness Team, to activate the Emergency Operations Center, and I will initiate the emergency operations plans for each of our divisions. I will utilize media and social platforms to publish concise daily updates on the status of our work and resources available for community needs. Because the jail is a high-risk environment for transmission of infectious disease, I will work with judicial and probation leaders to reduce jail population. While the jail is always full, about 60% are in custody for violations of probation and parole rules. Reducing population allows separation of inmates and reduction of spread. I will protect public by identifying those in jail for technical violations like not paying fines or completing directives of probation, then identifying those whose sentences are eligible for time off and close to release. For patrols, I will reassign deputies in administrative tasks to the road and keep deputies in communities for visible presence while they also practice protocols to reduce unnecessary direct contact and risk. In the case of COVID-19, we did not take these actions for near 2 weeks after the first confirmed case in Oregon. That's a problem. Turning now to question 4. There's an increasingly fine line between effective law enforcement and violation of community trust or unfair targeting of certain groups. As sheriff, how will you ensure equity, particularly when it comes to disproportionate policing of certain racial or ethnic groups in policing practices? Turning to Red, Red responds, in order to ensure equity in policing, we must first be willing to accept the possibility our practices, even unintentionally, may be differentially punitive to particular groups of people. We must accurately collect and analyze data, share results with our communities, and engage in collaborative problem solving. In police culture, there is prevalent resistance to acknowledging need for improvement or less than desirable performance. When Oregon's Criminal Justice Commission published the policing report in November, the Washington County Sheriff's Office was the only agency that both disproportionately arrested and cited Hispanic individuals. My opponent quickly explained this was likely due to the rate of Hispanics not legally licensed due to immigration status, adding that driving unlicensed is a top public safety priority. Conversely, I took those results as an invitation to take a deep look at factors that could lead to those results. As sheriff, I will examine data we collected for every potential variable. I will engage with our community organizations representing Hispanic and Latinx individuals to seek input on experiences of their members and their responses and thoughts on the results. And I will seek responses from patrol deputies on their experiences, observations, and thoughts on the results. I will update data collection practices, ensuring we are identifying individuals correctly and not combining multiple racial and ethnic groups into single categories. I will make sure staff are trained in and understand the importance of this data collection. As sheriff, I will balance training for all staff that recognizes training and cultural competency as equally important as survival skills training. I will require varied and routine training for all staff on implicit bias, cultural awareness, and social and cultural barriers. Same question to Pat Garrett. Pat responds, effective policing maximizes public safety, community trust, and participation, and minimizes inequitable justice outcomes, all while adhering to our constitutional oath. Historical inequities experienced in our communities of colors in the justice system are shared by other institutions to include housing, business, medicine, and education. I will continue work to address them in the justice system. Recent state analysis of deputies stop at data over a year is encouraging, but shows areas where equitable outcomes need to improve. A, deputies stop and conduct searches equitably. B, deputies find contraband equitably. C, rates of citations and arrests for white and black drivers are equitable. D, citations and arrests of Hispanic drivers occur at slightly higher rates. Hispanic drivers were found to drive without a license or while suspended at a higher rate, and until recently, many of our Hispanic residents were unable to legally acquire a license. While we recognize this as a likely contributing factor, we also recognize the imperative to address the inequity. My responsibility to ensure equity includes A, continuing focused training and leadership on equity, inclusion, diversity, and ethics. B, ensuring effective internal checks and balances that enforce high professional standards. C, researching other agencies' approaches and adopting best practices. D, continuing partnerships that bring diverse communities and law enforcement together. E, supporting data-driven enforcement strategies. F, finishing body camera deployment to increase transparency. Strong laws against profiling must be reinforced by agency policies, and a culture that prohibits profiling promotes compassion and training, protects against bias outcomes, and strengthens support for diversity, all of which we are doing. Turning now to question five. As a member county of a sanctuary state, Washington County is bound by Oregon law to not cooperate with or act on behalf of ICE's immigration enforcement. At the same time, the Washington County Sheriff's Office recently turned over immigration information related to two inmates in response to federal subpoenas, the first sanctuary state jurisdiction to do so. How do you plan to relate to ICE moving forward as sheriff? Question to Pat Garrett. Pat responds, I have two strongly held beliefs: follow the law and support strong community relationships. My beliefs were recently brought into conflict by receipt of federal administrative ICE subpoenas about two inmates in our jail. Legal counsel researched and advised me federal law has specifically authorized these subpoenas for decades. They were upheld by the Supreme Court. Federal law required compliance, and Oregon law allows compliance when required by law. Counsel lacked a good faith basis for a legal challenge. As sheriff, I am sworn to uphold state and federal law. The U.S. Attorney for Oregon stated he would seek a contempt order by a federal judge to compel compliance. In 2014, I was Oregon's first sheriff to stop holding police for ICE after the federal court ruled it unconstitutional. In 2018, I publicly opposed ballot measure 105, which would have done away with Oregon sanctuary law, and the presiding judge and I wrote a letter to Portland's ICE director requesting they not take enforcement action at our courthouse. I will continue to not honor unlawful ICE detainers, and I will not voluntarily share information that Oregon statutes have placed off limits to ICE. While a rare occurrence, if ICE is at our jail doors for someone who is normally being released, I allow safe transfer of custody to stop dangerous foot chases that were occurring outside a release door down Washington Street in downtown Hillsboro. Since this difficult decision involving the subpoenas, other Oregon agencies received similar subpoenas and were withdrawn after an initial challenge. A Denver subpoena is in court, and we look forward to the ruling. Until then, I will continue to do my best to follow the law, do the right thing for public safety, while supporting all our community members. Same question to Red Worthingham, and Red answers, sheriffs are not above the law. That means all our sheriffs must follow our state sanctuary laws. Additionally, over 60% of Oregon voters made their support for our sanctuary laws clear in 2018. I am very disappointed by my opponent's decision to comply with ICE's administrative subpoenas. I would not have done so. It is critical our elected officials have the knowledge, courage, and fortitude to stand up for the people they serve and the laws of our state. The rhetoric from ICE and the Trump administration preys on public fears of safety and mischaracterizes the complex civil removal process. I will not allow this propaganda to derail the safety, diversity, and livability for residents of Washington County. I will ensure safe communities where all members feel protected and have access to law enforcement services equitably. Further, I condemn my opponent's practice of using public resources to collaborate with ICE on release times and coordinate transfer of custody to ICE in the jail absent any criminal matters. It is a violation of our state's law to allow ICE in where public is not permitted to transfer people to ICE when they are supposed to be released. I will uphold Oregon's laws and the 10th Amendment. I will not cooperate with requests by ICE to circumvent our laws and interfere with the federal powers and discretion inherent in immigration investigations. Turning to our final question, Washington County Patrol and investigation teams are reportedly 89% white and 94% male. How do each of you plan to support and advance diversity in the sheriff's office, particularly for officers who frequently interact with the public? Red responds, in addition to those facts, the 2018 Washington County Workforce Report revealed hiring practices for public safety positions favor whites over Hispanics and blacks. This finding was statistically significant, which means not likely due to chance. In a 2017 Sheriff's Office discrimination appeal, the Washington County Civil Service Commission stated in their decision, quote, I am very concerned about the climate for employees in the jail system. To be successful, to have recruitment and then growing people within the department also means that we have to be able to retain them, and we're not going to retain the best if they come into an atmosphere where they do not feel supported by their peers, their subordinates, and their superiors. And I think that's the environment we want to work with the Sheriff's Department to help you build. We want a workplace which helps everybody succeed. Close quote. Recent recruitment practices attract a more diverse applicant pool. However, workplace culture at the Sheriff's Office has not comparatively improved in supporting and investing in diverse candidates for promotion, special team selections, and training. Additionally, discipline has been used disparately and indicates potential targeting of employees who have challenged culture and practices. I will impose requirements to document warnings and objectively impose discipline to ensure equity and prevent misuse of discipline as retaliation. I will use outside raters and blind rating methods to score promotional applications. I will require tracking of training and team selections to ensure all employees receive opportunities to thrive. When deputies are not representative of the public they serve, we lose valuable understanding of cultural nuance. We reduce our range of skills, perspectives, and insights in solving crimes. From everyday interactions with community to extreme crisis incidents, diversity in our employment, in our enforcement workforce, builds trust and rapport with the public. Same question to Pat. How do each of you plan to support and advance diversity in the sheriff's office, particularly for officers who frequently interact with the public? Pat responds, according to the FBI's 2018 national data, 14.1% of full-time certified law enforcement officers at metropolitan sheriff's offices are female. We exceed that average. Our business office reports 14.8% of certified staff are female, though they are more numerous in the jail division. About 11% of our total certified staff are non-white. We advance diversity in multiple ways. Our recruiting work includes focus on groups and events like the Portland Women's Expo, Fiesta on El Parque, Diversity Fair, Latino Career Events, Beaverton and Portland Pride, and Oregon Women Veterans Events. Our only enforcement deputy assigned to full-time recruiting is female and also the best qualified. Other part-time deputy recruiters are racially diverse. Many of the faces and stories of our recruitment deputies support attracting diverse staff. I will soon promote 2 chief deputies. We have 3 extremely well-qualified commanders in the running. One is female, one African-American, and one a person born in Cuba who immigrated to the United States. Senior leaders such as these are the result of our culture over many years that supports diverse staff and leaders. Female certified staff attending training in courses titled Women in Command, Leadership for Women in Law Enforcement, Building Warrior Women, the Women's Leadership Institute, female enforcers, and more. From 10 to 27 female uniformed staff have attended one or more of these trainings each year for the past 4 years. For years, our training and facilitated discussions have included diversity, equity, and inclusion using outside experts and our own DEI team of diverse staff who research, plan, and conduct training. Again, let me remind you that these questions were responded to in the third or fourth week of March. And I need to thank the candidates for their flexibility in helping us to manage in the debate in this way during this complicated coronavirus situation. And also, we need to thank Shauna Muckle, our intern, who has done fantastic research. We invite you now to go to our website and cast a virtual vote for your preferred candidate. Please go to insidewashco.org/vote. Cast your ballot there, and don't forget to get your real ballot in before May 19th.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to Culture in Motion, your twice-monthly show on KBOO with your host, Mike Crenshaw. I'm here with my co-host, Ryan Danley.
What's up?
What up? We're in a week whatever of stay-at-home COVID-19. Crisis worldwide. This is the Portland, Oregon version. So we're maintaining some social distance. We're in the backyard as opposed to the studio. And every now and then you're going to hear some birds singing. You might hear a dog barking. I just want to give you guys a heads up. Ryan, you're a writer, a comic, father. You were driving trucks for a while. You're unemployed. How's quarantine going for you?
It's been okay. It's been, doing the best I can. It's a new normal. Trying to, it's weird to not have, like, daily structure, you know? And I think I'm so, like, geared towards getting